Manchester Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Kaya Talk.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Well, thank you very much for staying with us. You may have seen over the weekend Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel early on Sunday, really making everybody a little bit nervous about what is likely to happen in the region. On the line with us is Aisha Kaji, who is a research fellow at the Africa-Asia Dialogues. Thank you very much, Aisha, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. Aisha, are you able to hear us? Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Yes, I'm able to hear you. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, it sounds much better now. Let us know if you can't hear us, but let's take this forward. I mean, we obviously saw what Iran had already told everyone, that they will be acting on their promise. It took them a little bit of time. Obviously, I think it is quite something to note that they decided to hold back during Ramadan. I mean, your take on that after the attack Israel did on them in Syria, in the in their commissioner's offices, which I think is very important that we point out, it wasn't just any other office; it was a diplomatic office that Israel absolutely was attacked at. Yeah,
So the equivalent of a consulate or embassy, and of course that then is Iranian territory under international law, and the Israeli attack on that consulate, which killed seven people, was the precursor to Iran's Iran's retaliation on Saturday evening. So I think we really need to contextualize that, because many of the Western mainstream media are not contextualizing it and are framing it as an unprovoked or unprecedented attack by Iran on Israel. Actually, it was provoked. Mm. There was an attack by Israel on the Iranian diplomatic attaché's office, as I said, what is in de facto Iranian territory in Syria.
I just want to speak to that. Aisha, let's stay there, because obviously their own response initially was, in fact, almost denying that they had attacked the consulate, saying, no, that was not really the target. The target was not there specifically. And of course, we had to get verification from sources on the ground who saying, no, that the attack was directly on the consulate. You know, almost in a way, Israel was hoping to get away with it, I think, but also really not much condemnation from other nations about Israel attacking the consulate, going obviously against international law.
As I said, you know, very, very much in contravention of international law, but also, as you said, initially at least denied, that it was a deliberate attack. But we all know that Israel has the capability for high precision and very, very specific precision attacks. So, you know, to actually claim it wasn't the intended target is a bit facetious, to be quite honest. You know, it smacks of the same kind of illogic that Israel has pursued in defending its actions in Gaza by saying that its actions in Gaza are not intended to attack civilians, when, again, we know it has the capability for precision targeting, and yet it has just, you know, unilaterally attacked Gaza as collective punishment to all the Gazans, even though it claims it's going after Hamas.
Let's also contextualize the tension between Israel and Iran, which has been ongoing for a long time, actually. So this is not new. It's been ongoing. But I just want us to place the reasons behind why Israel would make this decision right now. And strategically, what did they hope to achieve? Of course, what they're saying is quite different. And they've said, no, they were looking for terrorists and all of that. We know what they're saying. But just maybe diplomatically explain to me what they were hoping this would do. And of course, they knew Iran was going to respond. But strategically, what do you think they were gunning for here?
Strategically, I think they hoped to provoke an immediate retaliation from Iran, which Iran was smart enough not to do immediately. And that immediate retaliation that they'd hoped for, they were hoping to deflect global attention from the crisis in Gaza, the deliberate starvation, and the plausible genocide, as the ICJ has called it. In fact, the genocide, as many UN bodies have called it, in Gaza, and they hoped to finish the job that they were doing in Gaza, which was essentially to wipe out as many civilians in Gaza as possible. It's become quite evident over the last 6 months that that is the aim of the Israeli occupation forces, whether it is stated or not, and it has indeed been stated by senior members of the cabinet and by senior commanders within the military, that they essentially want to clear out Gaza. They want to clean out Gaza. They have dehumanized Palestinians to the extent that this is essentially a process of extermination now. It is a genocide.
Just to clarify what you mean by deflect attention, is it along the lines of what many say, you know, the world really doesn't usually, including the media, when I say the world, doesn't usually focus on more than one war at a time. You saw what happened in Russia and Ukraine. As soon as Gaza happened, then there was less attention on what was happening in Israel, I beg your pardon, Russia and Ukraine. And as you've seen also what's happening in Sudan, nobody takes note of that. Nobody's reporting on
that
in many other places.
No one's taking note of that.
Yes. So is that really along that?
The world only had the capability to focus on one conflict at a time. Or the mainstream media certainly appears to have the capability only to have sufficient compassion, focus, concentration to focus on one conflict at a time. And of course, what is going on in Sudan right now, and even in the DRC in Congo right now, is equally as attention worthy as what is going on in Gaza and other parts of Palestine, including the West Bank. So, you know, it's not an either or scenario, but it does seem this way. And because Israel has been receiving quite unprecedented disapproval, certainly amongst civilians around the world, if not within their government, Israel has become very heavily villainized, if you will, and rightfully so, I think, for what it is doing in Gaza. It wanted to deflect attention from that. So it thought that a deniable attack on an Iranian target would provoke an immediate response from the Iranian regime, from Tehran, which it didn't. The response was delayed. One of the Iranian analysts had likened this to being more strategic and boiling a frog. I'm not sure whether that is an apt analogy, but certainly the analogy has been made. There's also been much discussion in on social media and in alternative media circles about why Iran chose to attack the way it did, the broad variety of potential targets, whether it was just testing the ground, whether the U.S. And other allies of Israel who managed to successfully deflect, so they tell us, many of the drones and missiles and even cruise missiles on Saturday evening, whether those were actually the success they were claimed to be. There's been suggestions, as I said, in alternative media spaces and on social media, that perhaps Iran's aim was to calibrate what kind of defense mechanisms Israel and its allies, including the U.S. and the Arab states such as Jordan, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, etc., what the defense mechanisms they could actually put together at short notice. Perhaps Iranian military commanders wanted to test this, because it certainly seems as though they haven't used their most capable or most sophisticated weaponry that we know they have to date. It certainly seems that they haven't deployed that. So whether this was just, you know, a tit for tat and a sort of, you know, saying, well, we have responded, or whether there was a more strategic aim behind it remains to be seen.
Well, what it has done, and whether this is unfortunate or not, you'll have to tell me, it has, in a way, also united Israel with its allies, the UK and France coming to the fore as well, the US coming to the fore. And I'm sure, in fact, that's interesting, because I suppose the last time they were united publicly is after the killing of aid workers. But this has suddenly now galvanized that relationship. Are you surprised by that?
Not at all. I think after the killing of the aid workers that you referenced, the WCK aid workers, that was a coming together of the Allies, but almost in condemnation of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the wheel has spun full circle again. You know, there's been a 180-degree turnaround, if you will. And now they are allying with Israel, which is precisely what I believe Israel wanted.
Mm.
It's the strategy Israel hoped to evoke from, you know, getting a retaliation from Iran in order to draw it closer to its allies, who also see Iran, as Israel does, as a threat to their security and stability, etc.
What is this going to do for Netanyahu? You spoke about his war cabinet. I believe the war cabinet is slightly divided, but we also know publicly in Israel he's facing a lot of pressure. He's not bringing in back the hostages. We knew before the war that he was under pressure. His own political survival was really not really certain. What do you think this strategic move means then for him domestically?
I think a regional war will consolidate his power. And that's possibly what he's hoping to do at a personal level. Whether the remainder of this very far-right coalition he has gone into would actually agree with the strategy of an all-out regional war, which I believe is what Netanyahu is now aiming for, remains to be seen. It is, however, noteworthy that while France, the UK, Germany, the US, etc., have once again declared their support for Israel, they have also been unequivocally pressuring Israel to not escalate this into a regional war. Some would say it's already a regional war, to be honest, because you've got, you know, on the one side, you've got all of these Western nations I've mentioned, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Bahrain, the UAE, Kuwait, all of which have some form of naval bases for either the US or some other Western power, including Britain. They have got some capability that they have been providing to Israel or its allies in order to deflect the missile attack on Saturday and to ready itself for war. So some would say that the region is already on a war footing. And then, of course, you've got on the other side of the equation, you've got Iran, you've got Syria with, you know, its own internal political complications as well as its regional war. And, of course, Hezbollah in Iran, the Houthis in Yemen. So given that there are at least a dozen or more countries already on a war footing, the call to not let this escalate into a regional war seems perhaps, shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted, if you will.
Yeah, got you. Aisha Kaji, thank you very much for your take there. Thanks very much for your analysis. She is from Africa Asia Dialogues, and she is a research fellow there.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Kaya Talk. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m. If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.